This week on the Barag World Show, we're joined by designer, illustrator and Instagram photographer Mike Coos. This week's show is sponsored by Results Guru and the Digital Project Manager School. Hello and welcome to the Barag World Show, the podcast about all aspects of digital design, development and strategy. My name is Paul Barag. Joining me on this week's show is Marcus Lillington and hello, Mike Coos. Hello, Mike.
Hi there. How's it going? All right?
I'm doing very well. It's so nice to speak to you again. It was great just before we kicked...
I know, you too.
We kicked off, we had a bit of a chat, didn't we? It feels like forever.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, no, it does. It's, we sort of get together once every 2-3 years.
I know. I know. Well, from what I can gather from your Instagram feed, you've spent half your life jetting around the world on exciting trips.
Well, now and then, yeah. Not so much these days, but yeah, I have done in the past, yeah.
Yeah.
It sort of added a different strand to the design thing, yeah.
And that's intriguing, because last time you were on the show, Mike, which was 2-3 years ago, maybe more, actually, time flies by. You were talking a lot about that, so I'm guessing things have changed and moved on. But we'll see.
A little bit, yeah, a little bit.
So you were recently on Liz's show, the Elastic Brand, weren't you?
Yeah.
She was really, because I've been working with her as a mentor. And, you know, as soon as we started talking about the idea of digital brands and that kind of stuff, your name instantly comes up. But, I mean, that's far from all you do, isn't it? You do this quite cross-section of different stuff. So, when friends and family ask you what you do, what do you say?
I think normally I just default now, I just say design and photography.
Right, yeah.
But if I'm talking to someone, if I'm trying to explain to someone in the industry, I guess it would be just a combination of, you know, I guess it's quite heavily branding related web design. Mm. Normally my projects encompass both those things, branding and web design. And photography, which is a hobby, but also, you know, semi-professional through the work I do with brands and Instagram.
Yeah.
So I end up doing quite a lot of varied, interesting things across all of the different spheres. And sometimes Instagram crosses with the design world because I've done work, you know, with Adobe and Getty images before. Mm. And they sometimes cross paths, like I do design and photography mixed together sometimes.
That's interesting. With the Instagram stuff that you do, because that kind of grew organically, wasn't it? You were just a very early user of Instagram, and then you built up this huge following. So, and the thing that I always took away, and one of the things I absolutely loved about your Instagram work, is you only ever used your phone to take the photographs. Is that still true, or have you branched out of that a little?
I have branched out of that a little bit, but it's still my primary use of, I mean, basically, yeah, it's just the camera I have with me all the time is my phone, so that's what I end up using.
Yeah.
But for a lot of the professional things I do, I use a camera because they might need a high resolution.
Yeah.
And it just, they might need a quality picture that, you know, that a phone can't deliver.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I do, you do get some, there is some nice effects you get, you know, it is a bit of a different experience shooting with a real camera to a phone.
Yeah.
But it's, to me, it's sort of like there's pros and cons of both, because I love the fact that if a phone, you get more interesting things because you happen to have it when something interesting happens, you know. Yeah. Whereas I don't walk around with my camera ever, so.
Is there, the reason I pick up on that, I mean, it's nothing to do with what we're supposed to be talking about on the podcast, but the reason that I pick up on that is my dad is a wildlife photographer, and he lectures all over the world on wildlife photography, writes books on it, etc. And the one thing that he has always gone on about is when he speaks at photographic conferences, he's that guy that says, you don't need a fancy camera. And he's always, until relatively recently, he always had second-hand, you know, hand-me-down Canons and Nikons and things like that.
Yeah.
And he argues that you don't need that fancy stuff to be a good photographer. And I absolutely agree with that. So,
yeah, me too.
You know, you're the first other person that I've seen that seems to have a similar attitude. Photographers seem to become obsessed about their kit, you know?
I agree totally. I've never been into tools ever, really. I'm not really into my design tools particularly. I mean, I like them for what they do. I'm not really into, photography tools particularly. Like, I've got a whole range of different phones. I've got a couple of cameras, and I think, you know, for me, the most important thing is, you know, it's a photographer, and it's how you take a picture. And I've always said, like, you know, 99% of, you know, a great photograph is really the person behind the lens and the decisions they make. So, you know, I also love the fact that, you know, you can take great pictures with phones, because it just sort of, you know, democratizes the whole thing. And anyone can take great pictures. And that's the great thing about technology, isn't it? That anyone can have a radio show, anyone can have a TV show, anyone can be a photographer. And, you know, that's what I love about that.
I mean, did you know it would, I mean, was there any kind of plan in the Instagram stuff, you know, that maybe if I start putting work out there, it might lead to stuff, or did it just kind of happen?
Yeah, it was totally unplanned, just a hobby. Although it did dawn on me back in, I think it was in 2011, I think I had about 10,000-15,000 followers or something. And I just thought, maybe there's something I can do with this. And this was before influencers, really. It was before that sort of thing. And very, very soon after I thought that, I started to get a few emails about doing projects. And it's since become a much, much more, you know, competitive landscape. That and influencers, it's not just about having a lot of followers, it's about the field you work in. So, you know, I guess there's a lot of people who I think in the early days people were using people, you know, just basically people who had a following, whereas now it's definitely you get picked for projects that are much more relevant to the person who is supposedly doing the influencing. So I do a lot of stuff. A lot of the stuff I do always ends up me taking photographs out and about in the countryside and in my local area.
Yeah.
You know, so anything that's related to that, I can get involved with, really.
Right.
But outside of that, you know, I'm not like the kind of influencer who's always on Instagram stories. Talking to my audience and that sort of thing, you know. Much more. I mean, yeah, I like it like that. It's good to do things that you're genuinely, you know, interested in.
Yeah, otherwise it just turns into that hobby just turns into another job and another obligation that you
Totally.
I mean, you must know that.
Sounds quite familiar.
I was going to say Marcus, that must be like music was for you.
We were trying to have hits back in the days. We were signed to a record company, but when we had like five or six in a row that did nothing, you just start thinking, well, it'll never happen. It's a magic thing that happens to other people. And then kind of almost by surprise, oh, we've got this success coming out of America. But it all added up, really, to all's too strong. But we weren't really doing what we wanted to do. So once all that fizzled out and I got another job, and now 25 years ago or whatever, I started playing in other bands, it suddenly became something much more enjoyable, because I wasn't doing something, I wasn't kind of making pop records, which is never really what I wanted to do. It's just like that was what you're expected to do as a kind of young boy band type of thing. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah, totally, yeah.
So,
I can relate to that very much.
So, that brings us... So, it sounds like that's kind of gone over a little bit of a tipping point with the Instagram stuff, and maybe you're doing a little bit less of that now and doing more of the digital branding stuff. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I feel like in the last year, I've sort of shifted much more heavily back to the design stuff, branding. And like I said to you before we came on air, that I tend to do sort of branding projects with digital. We talked about this actually with Liz, about she was saying, do you see online branding different to branding? Mm. And I don't see it different. I just see it's just an arm of your brand, yeah. isn't it? But I do tend to end up working with brands that essentially do live their life online.
Yeah.
I guess it's just come from the whole web design days, yeah. you know. Mm. And I guess I made my sort of, you know, my sort of built up my trade in that specific sphere, working with startups and doing websites and realizing actually what I was sort of good at was, I don't know, just like finding out, digging into what a brand or a company is and expressing that through, you know, visuals online, mm. you know, and so it's just sort of, and that's what, yeah, it's basically what I would say I do, sort of.
Yeah.
Branding and web online.
And that, because, you know, what I love is that you don't just, you've talked about this before, but you say you don't have a process, but you actually do talk about that, you know, you start with coming up with a strap line of who, you know, something yeah, yeah. represents, and then you build the design around yeah. that. So that is very much that yeah. that interplay between yeah. brand and design, isn't it? And have the two set by side. We won't get too much into that today because, as you said, you recently did an interview at theelasticbrand.com. So if you want to know more about how Mike works and operates, then check out that, because that's really good. What we're going to talk about is more of the what actually Mike does all day, you know, what his day looks like, how he works, that kind of stuff. But before we do that, I just want to talk about our first sponsor, which is the Digital Project Manager School. So basically, these guys offer a digital project management course called Mastering Digital Project Management, and it covers the whole project lifestyle from initiation through to closing your project. It's a very interactive course with a mixture of video, roundtable discussions, Slack debates. You even get homework with peer grading and marking, but also with in office hours, you can ask burning questions. You can even get one-to-one coaching. So it's all very relevant to the kind of real world crazy kind of things that you face when you run projects. So it's not the ideal scenario stuff, but it's things like working with tiny budgets, vague briefs, crazy clients and stupid deadlines. Not that obviously any of us ever experienced those kinds of problems. It's very practical, lots beyond just theory. And it's great that they've got lessons that you can put into practice with assignments and those kinds of stuff. It's expert-led training. So it's taught by a guy called Ben Aston, who is an incredibly lovely chap that I've been chatting with. He's got over 15 years experience in the agency world. And he's supported by a number of other digital project managers. They're turning theory into practice. And these guys, you know, it's not some big organization. It's a group of passionate people that want to equip people to do project management. So keep an eye out for the next course. You can find out when it's being run and all the other details by going to theprojectmanager.com/BoagWorld. Okay. Mike. So let's talk a bit about your career. What it is you do, how you got to be where you are. Let's start at the beginning. How did this all happen for you? How did you get to where you are today? So we first met when you were working for a company called Personified back in the day that was running events, and you came on to do their design stuff. So how did that come across? Because you didn't have experience in digital before that, did you?
No, that was an amazing little turning point in my life, that, because I'd gone to college, did an art degree, and then ended up coming out of that and I worked for the body shop. I worked for the retail design visual merchandising department, and they taught me how to do Photoshop, Illustrator and stuff. And I had a good few years there, did a lot of print design for them, and then I working for them full time. Then I went freelance, did it for a few years freelance. They were my only client. Then they had a restructure, and I was literally bam, out of work.
Oh, crikey!
And it was before the internet was really. This is back. It's right back in you know, early 2000s, you know, like 2001 or so, 2000, 2001. And I was like, you know, printing out A4 sheets of paper for my designs and sending it off to companies to try and get some work. And anyway, a year, and in this time, actually, I started to illustrate a lot because I had no work. I just spent all day drawing pictures in my bedroom. Yeah. And I did actually end up getting a job locally. But then, after a few years, I just sort of realized that, you know, I don't know, I just realized the world was changing. Mm. It was changing from an analog to a digital world. And I remember one time I got contacted by this guy who I've done work for from a local company. And he said, "Do you want to design a website for me?" I was like, "No, I don't design websites." And I was like, and I remember just cycling along one day and I thought, maybe I should design that website. Yeah. You know, I called him back and said, "Actually, I will do it. I do sort of do websites." I didn't at all. And basically, and I found out my friend, I went, "I need you to teach me how to build websites." And so my friend literally, back in fixed width days. He just said, "Right, okay, open up this HTML file." He goes, "Okay, type, you know, div." Yeah. He just taught me how to do a menu that night, and I just deleted it and redid it. And after a couple of weeks, I'd done the homepage. And across that year, I did two or three websites, did my own portfolio, and I could only do design in HTML and CSS, and that's all I'd, you know, ever really could do. But it was enough to get, you know, to be all right designing stuff online. And it's funny, I came across that Cassonified job, and I came across that Cassonified job early in 2008, and I remember I sort of passed it by my wife, and she was like, "Yeah, that's cool, but we're not moving to Bath." And I was like, "All right." Mm-hmm. I'm like, "Okay, fair enough." And it was really weird. I just carried on doing my stuff. You know, I was like, "Well, you know, at least I've learned these skills."
Yeah.
And it's really weird. I remember I was just working really late one night, and I got this email, and it was from Gillian Carson.
Yeah, yeah.
And she just said, "Hey, we're looking for a designer. You know, we'd like you to come in." And it was completely, you know, given that they were in Bath and I was, and she just I never contacted them. I never did anything. It just, and I just seen this one job in the whole country, and then they contacted me, and I got that job, and it was a great few years for me because on a
phone, yeah.
It was, you know, Ryan was really up for me, just do my thing.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, I guess Cassonified was this amazing canvas for me to just sort of experiment and do, you know, all the sort of visual stuff I wanted to do online to, you know, and have an audience for it.
So the point came where you'd got this amazing job that was quite a high profile job in the industry. You know, because at the time Cassonified was running all of these events, you had the opportunity to speak at conferences. It really helped raise your profile. And then you walk away from that. And you set up and run freelance. What was going on in your head during that? Because, you know, a lot of us struggle. You know, if you've got a nice, safe job and, you know, you're kind of ticking along well, and especially if it's a nice, high-profile one, that was quite a gutsy move, and I'm interested in what happened there.
Yeah, I mean, looking back, I can't totally remember what happened, but I think what it was I was getting asked to do a lot of stuff for other people.
Right.
You know, I'm getting a lot of emails from people, you know, saying, "Hey, you can design this website, design that website." And Ryan was really cool about it. I actually said to him, you know, "Can I design some of these websites for other people?"
Yeah.
Yeah, while I was working at Cassonified. So I think, you know, for the last few months at Cassonified, I actually did do freelance work for other people. And, you know, Ryan was okay with that. And I just think there came a time I just thought, you know, if I get 20K's work booked in, you know, for the next few months, I'm going to take a leap and do something else.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I got those projects booked in, and I thought it was enough for me to feel like safe to do it. So I did it. And incidentally, at that time, I could already feel Ryan moving away because we'd already done the first version of Treehouse by that point, which was Think Vitamin.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, I think it was still called Think Vitamin. I don't know what it was called. Something to do. It was, yeah, he sort of, at the time that whole thing was ripped off Think Vitamin at the time. And it was starting up the courses there. And it was already moving away into something new at that point. And, it was just, so there was no sort of, it just felt like an evolution.
Really. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and so I moved off into my own thing. Yeah, and it just, it felt quite a natural thing to do. It didn't feel like a jump ship or anything, you know. It's just a evolution of a career.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's some interesting things over that little potted history you gave us very briefly there. One is I loved the kind of the blagget mentality of, oh, I can, you know, yeah, I do websites, and having no clue how to do them. It's really interesting. I had a very similar experience myself back in actually the Town Pages day, you know, when me and Marcus used to work together at Town Pages, where we won the National Trust, which was a huge client for us and was a really big deal. And one of their requirements is we make the website accessible. And I would say, oh, yes, we could do that. I had no clue. I knew nothing about accessibility at all at the time. And another one was we won one of our first clients as Headscape. And they said, and I've told this story before, I said that they want a content management system. And I was like, so I worked out how to build a content management system. And I think there's something to be said for just kind of throwing yourself into the deep end and seeing what happens. So I love that.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
The other thing you said, which I really loved as well, is when you made that decision to move to freelance, you gave yourself a trigger point. If I get 20K's worth of work. I always think that really helps with big decisions like that. For example, I had an equivalent, to be honest, when I left Headscape. I said, if this certain thing does not happen, then it's time for me to move on from Headscape. And that's what I did. And it kind of gives you that impetus to take that extra step, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It is nice to have those. I mean, leaving Cassonify for me wasn't, it's not, like you said, it was a great job to have, so it wasn't something I was going to give up lightly. There had to be a trigger point, and in a way, I guess it was a sort of arbitrary trigger point I made up, but it did make that decision easier. I wasn't tearing my hair out over it. I decided I'd put that trigger point in place, and then it hit. I did it.
Yeah,
and that was it.
Yeah, no, it's really really good.
Yeah. You come across, saying, Mike, as being kind of, I don't know, very laid back and not very kind of, how can I put this?
Highly strung like me?
Well, yes, there is that. But no, more not sort of like the kind of person that's like, I'm going to go and get it. Kind of, you know, you just don't come across that way. But a lot of these decisions you made were quite brave, I think.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was just like, nothing else to do. Let's just go kind of thing.
No, No, sorry, Karen.
No, I was just saying, we said similar when we started this whole series off with Paul and I talking about what we do all day and went back over the eons of history back when we first met each other. And it has been a case of sometimes you just got to jump and see.
You've
done the same, but you don't come across as that kind of person.
I mean, decision makers, I don't always find it, the people who know me will testify, I don't always find it easy to make decisions. But I think if you can be decisive of thinking your work, it's a brilliant thing. I've actually, in terms of my design work at the moment, the last 6 months, I've felt much, much more decisive and much stronger as a designer for some reason in the last 6 months. Yeah, I've got no idea what that is. And maybe it's just because I've had that shift back from photography back to design. But it's like, you'll know this, Marcus, from music, is that, you know, when you can get to a point in creativity where you just feel like you don't know what you're doing is any good anymore. And I've had that time in with design, but I feel like recently for some reason, I'm just a bit more confident in my ideas and more confident in the decisions I make with design. Like, I did a project recently and I did the rebranding for this travel company, and we're still working on it. It's changed to be made. But when I submitted the original branding concept, I just submitted it, just the singular concept, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And because I knew it was the best idea I'd had, you know? And I didn't really feel the necessity to add in all these other things that I've done. Whereas in the old days, I'd go, here's 27 ideas.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, and it's like, I feel like, you know, in the thing with design, especially branding and stuff, it's really, you know, when you approach it with a sort of a, you know, you talk to your client, you really understand who they are. And whilst there may be a few ways you can interpret that, you know, you as an individual designer, you're going to have your own interpretation. And I don't really see there as being, I don't really see there being hundreds of options, you know? There's, I feel like if you use the information you've been given, you know, and you, and everyone's clear about what that is and that direction, you probably, you don't need to come up with loads and loads of different things to decide between, you know?
Yeah, and that's kind of...
Go on, Marcus.
Sorry, I was going to say, I think it's a little bit... It's hard to compare music with kind of professional design work, writing songs, let's put it that way, because I worry, because I don't think I've written a decent song in 15 years, maybe 10 to 15 years, and I just think that's an age thing, and you lose your spark and lose your drive and that kind of thing. However, if what we're saying here, if we're making the comparison that as we get older, maybe more professional, more kind of comfortable in our skin to be confident about saying, no, this is it, this is what this is kind of what you're getting, and I think we do that as well. The work we do, we're a lot more kind of we don't kind of faff around with his three versions of a homepage and all that kind of stuff anymore. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we can still be creative and have a spark when we're older.
Yeah. Well, I think, and it's funny you talk about that. The reason I related it in my case to design to songwriting is because, well, two reasons. One, I do some songwriting as well. And I've recently taken it back up after a long break. And but also because of this kind of work I do, the kind of branding web work I do is still pretty creative, you know. It still involves a lot of illustration sometimes, you know, and a bit more of a, you know, it's in a way, that's normally why people hire me, you know, is to get something. So I'd see it's like, you know, the web design I do is normally less of the technical end and much more of the creative end, and that's why I sort of related it back to the songwriting.
Yeah,
because for me, it's still like there's a quite a large part of the web design I do is relying on that creative spark, and that, you know, that's one of my sort of greatest fears.
Yeah,
you know, is not having that. You know, and it is. And I look back in a way that, you know, when I was at Personified, I was like this sort of like machine. It felt like, you know, like I just had loads and loads of. I was like, it is different. It is sort of, you definitely are a different kind of person when you're older.
Is it? Sorry to interrupt you, but I always think about when I was younger that, yes, I was an idea machine and I churned stuff out at a rate that I don't do now, but it was rawer somehow. My hit to success ratio was lower, you know, and the ideas that came out were less considered, you know, and I can almost see that, if I'm honest, from looking at your work. It's been a while since I've looked at your portfolio, and there is a shift, you know, where the kind of stuff that you did before was very creative, very innovative, very unusual, while today maybe slightly less, but more appropriate, more suited.
Yeah.
You know, so that's, it's different. It's not better or worse, in my opinion, if that makes sense.
No, I agree. Yeah. I mean, I'm much more aware of striking a balance. I mean, to be fair, going back to the Personified projects, you know, they had much more leeway in the sort of you know, we were sort of doing it, almost being creative for the sake of it, yeah. and wanted to be seen like that.
Yeah. Mm.
But you're right now. I mean, now I'm working on branding projects, and the companies have got, you know, it's important for them to get it right and have to strike a balance. And I'm really aware of that balance now. Mm. And I try my, I try my best to, like, get as much creativity in, but at the same time, I never would want to do it at the expense of, you know, what's necessary in terms of keeping things, you know, in line to, a you know, I guess, you know what I'm saying,
yeah.
sort of professionally. Mm. And there's a balance to be struck, and hopefully, I definitely feel like I am striking that more now as an aged designer.
We're sounding so old, don't we? This is terrible. Yeah, yeah. So one of the things that we talked a little bit about your character, and we've talked about how you come across as this very calm, this very laid-back, kind of relaxed person. And one of the things that in my mind doesn't add up, right, is you and sales and marketing, right? I joked at the beginning of this, before we started recording, I joked about you being so arrogant and full of your own self-importance. And obviously I was being ironic because you are completely the opposite of that. You know, you're the kind of person that I imagine would suffer from imposter syndrome at times. You know, I know you don't like public speaking. Just the idea of you going out and selling and promoting your services doesn't seem to fit with how I mentally view you. So where the hell does your work come from?
Well, I think traditionally it's always come from just putting out work.
Right.
You know, I mean, in my mind, like, in the, you know, it's just, in my mind, I see putting out a project. And I do use Twitter and Dribbble and Instagram. I do put out the work that I do. But yes, you're right. I don't go crazy in sales. I don't have any strategy for sales and marketing. It's all sort of like inquiries via people seeing my work online or word of mouth recommendations. I'd never done any sales at all. I mean, this public speaking thing, you know, I don't dislike public speaking. I just, it's, you know, I get something out of doing it, you know, but it's in terms of it relating. Yeah. I wouldn't see it, ever see it as an exercise to promote myself, if you know what I mean. It's more, just trying to, you know, I'm interested in the idea of conveying. I love the idea of imparting design knowledge or ideas to other people, you know. But and if that could help gain some work, that would be a great thing. Mm. But yeah, there is no strategy, and you know, I just, you know, I'm not always crazy busy. I've had quieter times and more. You know, I'm been very busy for the last 6 months, and I'm busy into the future. But now. But sometimes I've had quieter times, and I've filled it up with other things, you know. Mm.
Do you get,
yeah, I'm lucky enough to get work. You know?
Do you write any of, you know, you say you rely on Dribbble, you rely on Twitter and Instagram and putting your work out there. Do you write that into agreements with clients that you want the right to be able to share this kind of stuff, or do you just have to broach it and hope for the best? Or do you just do
it?
No,
I don't write an agreement. I just do it. Yeah. I don't put, I never put anything out that's not already out in the public domain.
Oh, okay. You know? So you're never showing work in progress?
I never do that. No.
Okay.
No, I never show work in progress, and I never put anything. The only thing I put out, like, I've just published a website for a Hollywood-based sound studio called snapsound.com. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've just published that all over Twitter last week. But it's only anything, the only thing I'm would put in my portfolio is anything that's already out there. Mm. So, but I'd never, I wouldn't ever put anything out there without a client's permission that wasn't in the public domain. I'd always have
some of our clients, we have a clause in the contracts that we try to encourage our clients to sign. Not all of them do. We have a clause in there that says we are allowed to, put together portfolio pieces using their name. And some of them say you can't do that. So
yeah.
But we still kind of do it.
I guess, I've never had any problem with it, you know. But I'm always pretty careful about the stuff that I would publish, I think, you know.
Paul's asked quite an interesting question in the chat room, which is, how much is of the work that you're winning is, do you think is coming through your portfolio, things like Dribbble and Twitter and stuff, compared to we want to hire Mike Coots? In other words, how many of the people already know you when they contact you? Have you got any gut reaction?
Most people, well, you know me. People know of me normally, yeah.
Yeah.
Normally, I mean, a lot of people, I've just got a new project coming up, and they just said they've known about me for years, but obviously never had a need to use me until
then. Yeah.
So, you know, so they get that quite a lot. You know, I've seen, you know, I've always liked your work sort of thing. Yeah. You know, we've got this project. So that does happen, yeah. But I mean, I don't just, I mean, yeah, I don't actually, when I say I do use Dribbble, but I don't, and I do get inquiries through Dribbble. But I don't think, I'm not sure I've ever actually ended up doing a project through Dribbble.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I mean, I do get inquiries, but some of the people, you know, my friend designers, they get a lot of inquiries through Dribbble and win, you know, and end up taking those projects on. I tend to have quite a lot of conversations on Dribbble, but they don't always go somewhere. And normally I think that's because the people in Dribbble who contacted me don't know.
Yeah, right, absolutely.
They've just done a search for, you know, whatever, you know, certain, you know, UI or something,
yeah,
and I've come in that search and we'll mail him. But you know, sometimes the conversations go somewhere, but generally the ones that projects that I win, there's normally some sort of background information there. You know, there's normally some sort of relation to people knowing about me from something else, you know.
One thing you said there, which is it's a huge sales lesson, which is, you said that they'd known about you for years, but they didn't have a project that fitted with you. It just says that's why you need to keep in contact with people, or just keep kind of like waving your flag. Mm. Because
we've
had projects, well, we're in the middle of one at the moment that was due to start in 2014, and it started in November.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I had
just stick with it, basically.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, I went back to a client once a couple of years ago, and I just felt like I hadn't done any. I just felt like I'd gone down a real sort of creative illustrative route, and I wanted to do some web related UI work again.
Yeah,
and I just wrote to them and said, "Hey, you know, I'm thinking of, I'd like to do some web UI work. Let me know if you've got anything." And they just, you know, they just went, "Oh yeah, we've got this app redesign." Okay, I'll do that then. It's just because I happened to mail them about it, this really big project came in.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the advantage, isn't it, about, you know, as you move on in your career, you build up more and more of those kind of contacts, and you build relationships where you could turn around and just say, "I fancy doing a bit of this. You got anything on that?" You know, I do that sometimes. I tell you, but I know exactly what you mean about Dribbble as well, because I suffer from a similar kind of problem. Well, it's not a problem. It's wonderful that actually my site has been around for so long that it rates very well on SEO. And so I get a lot of people that Google, I don't know, customer journey mapping or whatever. My stuff comes up. They come through and they contact me. Very rarely do those actually turn into work. The ones always, without exception, the best work is the work that comes, "Oh, I've been following your stuff for years." You know, that is every time, because they already know you. They know what to expect from you. So the project is going to go smoother, because they're not going to be surprised when you produce what you produce at the end of it. So,
exactly,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's my same experience. Yeah.
Let's talk about your typical month, right?
Okay.
I'm kind of quite interested to know, we'll start with month, because going day is probably a bit much, but give me, you know, over the last month, give me an idea of the kind of mix of work that you're doing over a typical month.
This month I'm working on a branding and web design project for a sort of a travel company based over in Portugal and Morocco. I've been working on that since the end of last year.
Yeah.
And that's ongoing. So that's everything from the web. We're currently working on the website. But it's also covering, you know, because I did the brand as well, it's covering everything from, like, they've got car decals, they've got T-shirts, all sorts of other literature. So there's a lot of stuff to do, and the brand document itself. I've also done...
Sorry to interrupt you. I want to ask a question with that. Is that a client you met face to face, or do you normally do the whole thing remotely?
That's all remotely. Right. Yeah, I've never met them.
Okay. All right.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I do talk to them on the phone.
Yeah, yeah.
We have video calls like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And we have a really good relationship, actually. You know, it's really, you know, it's good to chat. We talk through things, and it's like being, you know, in my mind, when you video call or you have a phone call, it's pretty much like being with them, you know. But yeah, so
any excuse to go to Portugal, I'm sure.
But yeah, so I've done that. I've been doing an Instagram project, taking, you know, sort of showcasing the capabilities of a Huawei phone.
Okay.
In the last month, which has been pretty cool. And what else am I doing? I'm doing research at the moment for design, a new branding project that's coming up, in web project, which will start next week.
Now, you said research. You said research there. What kind of research are you talking about?
Really just gathering inspiration and stuff and trying to work out in my head. I mean, we've already had an initial meeting in London last week, and now I'm basically just going to spend the next week sort of, I don't know, immersing myself in, you know, who they are and where I think we could. I've got, you know, so this is the sort of this creative part where, you know, there is a little bit of less process. I've just got to try and, you know, hopefully, you know, I do have a process, like you said, you know, and I've talked about that at conferences in my process, which is essentially is sort of getting all the information from them, working out in the most succinct possible way how to say what they do to the right people, and then creating a sort of a visual story to go with that. And that is what I do. But there is an initial part to this, which is the bit that, you know, I'm afraid of losing as I get older, is, you know, is that just the initial creativity. Like, I often get ideas in the shower, you know, I'd just be like having a shower and be like, bam, that's it, you know. I'll do that. And so my mind just wanders off into these weird places. I'm almost like you're sort of semi-dreaming. You've got all these ideas happening. And then if I get them, I quickly note them down on my phone and then explore them when I get to the office. Yeah. So I'll be doing that. I'll be doing that this week. And I also haven't actually got myself in gear yet, but I'm supposed to be writing a photography book.
Oh, really? So, excellent.
Yeah. So I had been offered a publishing deal, which is cool, but I'm not doing it right now because I just don't have the time to do it to their schedule and stuff.
Yeah.
But I feel like as well, also that I haven't decided, you know, I want to do it my way.
Yeah.
So, and I feel like too pressured to do it their way right now. You know, they've been really cool and really helpful, and, you know, I'm sure we'll speak again, but, you know, and it's a bit, it's got of going back. The idea of the book is to sort of encourage people to get into photography, not with necessarily a mobile phone, but that is geared at people who might just be using a mobile phone.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's all about the fact that you could buy this book and look through it, and if all you have is your mobile phone, everything in there is relevant for that.
Yeah.
You know? So it's not going to be about apertures and,
you
know, shutter speeds. It's going to be just about, the whole, you know, there will be some stuff. It's about the creativity and thinking about light and just all sorts of everything that goes into taking a photograph, but without all the technical stuff. So I want to sort of get that in gear too.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, you know, I think you've heard, you must have this as well, that I've seen loads of people talk about it, is this idea that, so when you're busy, you're like, I've got to do my photography book, but you can't because you're busy. And then if you go quiet, you're all like, I should be doing my photography book.
Yeah.
And you're not, you know, it's like you need, and I've sort of realized, actually, I've got to try and do these things all at the same time. Because like when you're, you know, it's, you can, as soon as you're quiet or you've got more time, it's really hard to push yourself to do the things you always said you would do.
Yeah.
You know?
That's
all I'm really trying. Worry about the next project. Where's that coming
from? Exactly. That's, I think that's what happens, doesn't it? Mm. You get those worries and you just can't focus and just doing your own thing.
That so, is one advantage of signing a contract with a publisher.
Yes.
Right? Because I've signed up with Smashing for my next book. and they've given me they've given me, as you do, you get a an advance on your fee, and I'm thinking I've taken money from them. I've got to produce something now, you know.
I was totally aware that would be this trade-off. I absolutely knew when I said, actually, let's not do this right now. it meant I wouldn't do it right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is like therapy for you, Mike. Yeah. Are you coming around? You know, do you think you probably should sign that?
I think...
Go on.
No, I was going to say, you're totally right. Once you sign the deal and you get your advance, you know, you're definitely going to be writing that book, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. There's one. So that's a month. Brilliant. Great. Do you, on an individual day, I'm guessing for you pretty much it could be all over the place depending on what you're working at. But do you have any kind of routine or, you know, anything that you follow? Do you start with email? Do you go for a walk at the beginning of the day? What's your routine, if any?
Yeah, I've got a routine. The only routine that comes into my life really is essentially through my family. So I get up quite, you know, 2 or 3 days a week, I'll take the kids to school first before coming to the office.
Right.
So that's quite a normal thing to do. And then I'll get, you know, grab a coffee, come to the office. I try not to do email in the morning because it's a really productive time in the morning. Mm. And I do end up doing admin because you get unexpected emails, don't you? Mm. So, and some that need to be acted upon quickly. And I'll just, you know, then I tend to get sort of like a chunk of time in on a certain, you know, my current design project, maybe go back to some admin in the afternoon. Sometimes I go out of the office and just take a walk around Chichester and take some photographs. I'll often, you know, in the morning on the way in, actually, if the light's really nice, I'll take a detour to somewhere I like taking photographs and do that. It doesn't take too long. And then, you know, then and in the evenings, you know, if I'm, you know, normally try and go for a run or something like that. And ideally, I'd like to do the admin in the evening so I don't get distracted by it in the day. Mm. That's sort of my goal. But, you know, obviously I've got to get, you know, got to do things like, do homework with the kids and stuff like that as well. So, you know,
I mean,
but I think my day is relatively, they are varied, but pretty normal.
I mean, you've talked there, you go to the office, so you don't work from home. You have a separate office, do you?
Yeah. I've got an office in town here and I share it with a couple of another designer, Ollie, who does pretty much what I do. He comes in, and also my friend Tom, and Dan Edwards was in here. Who you know, Dan?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
He was up until recently before he moved to Product Hunt, and so there's the four of us. Now there's the three of us. But I'm not a much of a home worker. I can't work from home.
Oh, fair
just
enough.
To sort of. I mean, I do. I have worked from. I can work from home a little bit in the evening, but even sometimes I forgot to do work in the evening. I'll come back to the office because. It's just something about the walls. You know, if I'm in the office, I feel like I can do work.
Yeah.
At home, I don't know, it doesn't just feel like a work environment to me.
Yeah.
You know, it just doesn't feel right. I find it really difficult.
Oh, it's fair. Everybody's different. And, you know, I'm always interested in how home working could be one of those polarizing things. You know, you either it's something you absolutely love and it feels right and it's a good fit, or it's something that really doesn't. It's interesting that Andrew Miller is saying the same about email. It's very polarizing. Some people see it as an essential part of their job, as I know you do, Marcus, and other people just see it as a distraction and an irritant. Such is life, isn't it?
Well, I mean, with the home working thing, looking at the three of us on the screen here, you work from home all the time, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
You work away from home in an office all the time, Mike, and I do 50-50. That's the perfect scenario for me.
Yeah.
I love being able to do both.
Well, I never like leaving the house.
No, I know.
It's good.
The very last question I want to ask you before we wrap up is what do you think about the future? And you know, you talked about some anxiety about you being able to continue doing this. Do you have a plan? Do you think your job's going to change? Or are you a kind of take it one day at a time kind of person?
I think I'm like I think in reality, I'm sort of a take it one day at a time kind of person. I guess my plan is always to do something on the side of this, but, I really like designing for clients. I mean, I love the idea of having a business venture aside from designing for clients, but at the same time, I haven't expanded my design business, if you know what I mean. I don't employ loads of people. I employ people on an ad hoc basis to work with me who I need on an individual project, but I am a sort of a maker. Do you know what I mean? I'm still the person that makes all the things. So I don't, and I feel like whilst I like the idea of having some sort of business, I don't see myself as a business person. You know, I see myself as a sort of creative person who makes things. The book idea, I think that's a possible departure, not a permanent one, but that's the sort of thing I can see myself doing on the side.
Yeah.
Because it's still creative, but it's something slightly different to the idea of just doing client work. But in terms of actually running a business, I don't know really. I feel like I'm happiest when I just admit to myself I like making things.
Yeah.
I like designing things for people. I like, writing little song ideas. I like illustrating. I like taking photographs. If I'm really honest, those are all the things I like doing. And when you enjoy something, it's hard to get away from that, isn't it?
Well, I mean, why would you want to? It's the big question. I remember having a conversation with you quite a while back where you were toying with the idea, do I build an agency and, start employing people? Yeah. And I find it interesting that you've chosen not to go down that route. As somebody that walked away from an agency, that is a big decision, that there is this perception that to be a success, you have to grow a big business and be an entrepreneur. But if success to you is making stuff rather than managing people, why on earth would you want to do that?
I think there's a sort of a pressure in society, isn't there, that in general, that this idea of like being an entrepreneur and building something and is what you should be doing. But the truth is, you just need to do what makes you happy. And obviously you've got to do something that earns your money. But I mean, I'm not like massively, I like the idea of having enough money to live and not scrimp and save every week.
Yeah.
But I'm not obsessed about the idea of being rich or anything. The things I love in life are pretty simple. I'm really actually a massively easily pleased person.
Same here. Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, I don't need a lot. I mean, I've got a guitar and family and some good friends. And, that's all I really need and want. The one other thing I do love, though, the one thing I really strive for is I love making... I do have like quite romantic ideas about achieving a creative goal. I used to love the idea of, just creating something you're super, so proud of that when you put it out there, it hopefully moves other people in some way, And that's the one other thing I think that I have sort of ambition I've always had with a project is to put it out and inspire some other people.
Yeah.
And that sounds really...
No,
I'm not trying to, not in a, like I want everyone to be inspired by me.
No, I know what you mean.
I love being inspired by other things.
Yeah.
And I think, if I could do that, it'd be great.
Well, I mean, you obviously are doing that judging by Paul's comment before we started the show in the chat room, who goes on about how much he admires your design work. And I just completely stomped all over him with my sarcasm and rudeness. But you do some incredible work, Mike, and you certainly inspired me, and I'm sure you have a lot of other people as well. Let's talk about our second sponsor before we make Mike endure the horror that is Marcus's joke. Our second sponsor for this week is Resource Guru. Resource Guru is a team scheduling tool used by organizations like Apple, Ogilvy, Saatchi & Saatchi, and NASA. If your tool is being used by NASA, that must have been so cool the day they found that out. You know, oh, yeah, yeah, we work for NASA and we use your tool. They're probably launching rockets with this particular piece of software, and I just think that's awesome. So Resource Guru, do Headscape still use that? They did it years back, but whether Emma changed things, you still do?
No, we still do.
Excellent. Yeah. So you can add Headscape.
And Headscape.
Yeah. Not quite as impressive. But it does show that it's a tool as much for smaller organisations. Quality organizations as it is for big ones like Apple.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So with Resource Guru, you can instantly see who's busy and who's available, so you can be confident your projects are realistic and your timelines are realistic, and that you've always got the right resources available when you need them. So you can visit resourceguru.io/BOAG. To start a free 30-day trial. You don't need any credit card. And if you decide you want to subscribe, you can use the promo code BOAGWORLD2019 and you'll get 20% off your lifetime subscription, which is a very good deal indeed. So, Marcus, joke time.
Yes, this is a particularly average one, I think, fair to say.
Oh, you've really, right, oh yeah, you've really built that one up then.
I had to kind of delve into the past a bit for this. Please send me more jokes, Mr. Edwards, and ignore Paul being nasty to you, like he was earlier. Anyway, here we go. I quit Sudoku Club last night. They didn't make me feel welcome, and I realised it was because I was just making up the numbers.
Yeah, that's poor. That is, yeah. So, Mike, thank you very much for joining us on the show. It was a really good show up until that point, but there you go, you know.
No, thanks for having me. It's great. It's always good to chat to you.
Yeah, it's always good to catch up with you, Mike. I'd like to do it in person in a pub before too long. That's what
we Yes, mean. We should do that. Yeah, definitely got to do that.
Next week, we've got Harry Roberts on the show, who is a senior UI developer at Sky and the mind behind a site called CSS Wizardry. And he's got a fascinating background and story, so we will delve into that next week. But for now, Mike, where can people find out more about you?
Well, either on mikecoos.com, and then my username on Twitter, Dribbble, and Instagram's all Mike Coos.
Easy.
K-U-S.
Yeah.
So that's it. Yeah,
definitely, nice. Definitely go and check out his work, because Mike has got some really gorgeous stuff, and I am envious of somebody with so much talent. So on that note, I will end the show. Thank Mike, thank Marcus, and say goodbye. Bye all.
Thanks. Cheers. Bye. Bye.